everybody, and welcome to episode 40 of Magic FM. Mashi, we're on the big 4-0. I'm Gabby Smartphone, your host today, and I'm joined by Mashi as always. Mashi, welcome.
Hey, Gabby, how are you doing? So the podcast is the big 4-0, but only one of us has hit the big 4-0. So.
Don't worry, I'm making my way there slowly, but surely.
Yeah, I guess there's certain inevitability built into that. But yeah, 40 episodes, that's awesome. You know, the big milestone for us, I know we've already talked about this, 52. 52 will be a year. It's a weekly podcast, so we're pretty close to hitting that one.
We've only ever missed one episode. And it was, funnily enough, when we were both in the same place, which
oh my gosh, that's right.
That would make it easier, but it actually made it really hard. It was a regional players tour Phoenix.
And that's right.
There was just a lot of stuff going on that weekend, so it was hard to catch up.
It was a good one to take off. We were both busy, and I think both pretty tired too.
Yes,
so, I think it made a lot of sense to not do it then. But we're working our way there. So in a few short months, we will be on our 1-year anniversary. We'll have to figure out something fun to do.
I would really like to do. And if anybody has any ideas for anything you'd like to see on a 1-year anniversary, let us know. You can hit us up on Twitter. Both Mashi and I are super active there at Mashi Scanlon or at Gabby Spartz. Also, we have the podcast at Twitter.
At Magic FM Podcast. You can get us there too. So how's the week been, Gabby?
It's been really good. Been busy, but you know, all good stuff. And the cube ended this week, sadly.
I was
really sad. I'm recovering. The exciting thing is Double Masters is coming out soon. There's actually a pre-release event that's happening tomorrow, and the actual, I think, all the rest of the events for it, I think, are starting next week. So those sets tend to be pretty fun to play, so I'm looking forward to playing some of that on Modo.
Are you going to get in any Dominaria drafts? Dominaria, of course, human Dominaria draft is coming to Arena. I didn't really draft Dominaria at all, but I think Luis loves that set for draft. I don't know how you
feel. I think it's me. I think you're thinking of me. Luis really likes it too, but I'm the one that's super high on Dominaria draft.
Okay.
So I might. So the only problem I have with Dominaria is that because they've brought it back as the flashback format on Arena multiple times, every time they brought it back, I've played a lot of it. So I don't have that much appetite. Like, there's no nostalgia because it wasn't that long ago that I played it.
Sure.
So, it's a fun draft format. I like it a lot. If you haven't done it, I couldn't recommend it enough. But I've just done it so much. Like, it's different when they bring back Innistrad as the flashback format. And it's like, wow, this is exciting. It hasn't been around for a year because they only do it for Halloween. But this one is like every 2 months they bring it back or something.
All right, so I'm gonna have to get with you after the podcast sometime and figure out the dominant, because I've never drafted it. So I have no idea.
It's super fun. I really, really strongly recommend it. I actually think there's been a couple articles coming out on CFB that are kind of a refresher if you haven't played Dominaria Draft, or like what archetypes you should know, just tips and tricks for the format in general. I don't remember if it's a pro article or not.
It's not. The one, so I think James Keating, who is managing the content now for Channel Fireball, he just posted kind of like a compilation of past free articles. And I believe that one is on the free side. Luis, for both Throne and for Theros, because TBD is the quick draft. And up until the switch over to Dominaria, Eldraine's been the premium, another premium draft option. He wrote a great kind of like second look at it and listed all the top archetypes, all the top commons and how to treat the format, which was great because I tried drafting both. I failed miserably, but I read Luis's articles and I felt, even though I didn't do well, I just felt like I actually understood a lot more about those formats, which I didn't draft. I did drafted none of Theros and drafted a little bit of Eldraine. So
yeah, I just found the James article, which we can definitely include in the show notes for the episode. Let me actually make myself a note to do that. And it's got some cool stuff. So he has compiled Luis's rankings for every color, so white, black, Wooburg, and artifacts, and gold. And then he has a Ben Stark series of what's the pick for Dominaria, a Mike Sigrist piece about what makes Dominaria so good, a Frank Karsten pick order, so if like you're going through a draft, like it lets you figure out which order you should pick things in, a Gabriel Nassif, under and overrated cards in the set, Paulo Wow. He tore down with DeRosa with some
PV.
I know, a PV article about learnings from GP Dallas to give you insight on the large event. This was Dominaria specifically, and a Brian DeMars article that was a recap of the format in late 2018. So like the tail end of the format. So yeah,
that's good.
Really cool content.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really cool content if you're interested in doing Dominaria refresher course. There's good articles that you can find on CFP for this. And all of these are, as you mentioned, it looks like they're on the free side. So you can navigate through them pretty easily.
We may end up, I think Luis may end up doing something on the pro side as well, just his thoughts now. Because limited, it's not static, right? It really does evolve, which is the beauty of limited. Now, Dominaria, because it's come and gone so many times, it's probably hit its final form. There's been enough of that. But the Luis pick orders and the Carsten pick orders, that's from right at the start of the set. And it's always really interesting. I love going back and seeing sets I've drafted a lot of and then looking at those initial pick orders, because some of it, you know, inevitably, because it's first takes, some of it cards were overrated, some of it cards were underrated.
There's a lot of cards that people have famously underrated or overrated, because I don't know if you remember this, Mashi. There's a period, you know, Jace Friend's Prodigy. It's like probably maybe the best flip planeswalker from Magic Origins in 2015. There were a lot of people who thought that was a bad planeswalker. They're like, this is horrible. It's an O2. It doesn't do anything. It is so good, and it was so good in its format, and it gets play in a lot. Like, it just gets play everywhere. It's a super good cube card, and there were a lot of people who were haters. So it's kind of sweet when you see what people rated cards at up to, like, wow, I can't believe people thought this card was bad. This card's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, formats dictate a lot of that. Like, for instance, in M21, two drops are so playable, and in a lot of formats, like you're not aggressively taking two drops, right? Like who cares about your 2-mana 2/2 with vigilance, your 2-mana 1/2 that you can pump or whatever. But in M21, it's like, no, those cards all see play. So, you know, format's important.
And so much of formats is also hard to predict when you just see the cards like Khanza Tarkir, which is also one of my favorite draft formats of all time. One of the things that was really interesting in that format is that 2/3s were really powerful because morph was a mechanic in that set. And so when you morph something, it becomes a 2/2 face down for 3 mana. Mm-hmm. So a 2/3 was just dominating the board. Like you had a 2/3, you were set.
Yeah.
And that stuff you only know once you've played the set and got acquainted with the cards. So those rankings and ratings do change over time.
I fell into that trap in Onslaught. I can't remember the name of the cards. 1 mana, 1 other for 2/2. That's it. And the card was great because when you have a 2 mana 2/2 and everyone's playing morphs, you're just ahead, right? The mana efficiency is so much further in your favor. And so that was a high pick. Well, I mean, you're not going to first pick. I mean, you could, but it's probably not a great idea. But it was a high enough pick. And then I remember the core set that came out immediately after had the same card. And I kept going like, kept high picking that 2 mana 2/2, and it was not
and it was
good
bad in that format.
Yeah, it was like, you've got to change. I think morph changes a lot with what creatures are good, you know. So, but yeah, I think that I've been super excited. You know, I've been playing a ton of Magic and I've been playing a lot of Limited, so I'm super excited with these other formats.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing what you think about Dominaria, because I really truly love that draft format so much. I think you're really gonna like it. And if anybody here listening to this podcast hasn't tried Dominaria, I really go take advantage of it. It's not often that you get to play like that. That set is just a delight. It's so, so good.
Okay. Oh, wow. Okay. I'm really looking forward to
it. Yeah. No, it's truly so good.
You mentioned Double Masters. And before we dive further into the podcast, we can say, you know, Double Masters currently available for pre-order on channelfireball.com. I'm going to show my age again. This is going to be the 4-0 podcast. Do you have any idea when I say the words Eddie the Echo? Do you know who Eddie the Echo was?
I didn't do this, Mosh. You are the one that's aging yourself on the podcast. I just want it on the record. I did not cause this.
That's okay. There was this back in the day. I think the McDouble's still on the McDonald's menu. There was when they introduced the McDouble. Mm-hmm. The person who did it was like Eddie the Echo. And I keep trying to get us to run these like Eddie the Echo type campaigns for Double Masters.
Are people telling you like, Mashi, no one knows who this is.
Nobody gets it. And he was like walking around town. And he's like, how you doing? Looking good. Little hungry. Then he walks into McDonald's and then he's like, Eddie, I've got the perfect sandwich for you. It's the McDouble. So that's what I keep thinking.
Oh my God. But that's so
they won't let me do it on Channel Fireball. So I saddled Magic FM with it. But yeah, Double Masters available. This has been a weird set, and I don't know if you've paid attention to it, but it's kind of gone from like, what's this Double Masters things to like, there's a lot of hype around it. It's a good set. It really is. I'm not just saying that to. In fact, it's one of those ones where it's like we're probably going to sell out. Whatever. I think everyone's going to sell out of Double Masters. It's such a good set that I think some retailers are like, maybe I don't sell out, and it's not the worst thing in the world. There's great cards in it. I don't know if you've paid attention.
Yeah, I've been following the spoilers. I actually had some preview cards that I unveiled on my stream a couple days ago. Maybe we'll get one for Magic FM next time. Wink, wink, nudge,
doubtful,
nudge.
Doubtful. What were your preview cards?
Maelstrom Nexus. I don't know if you've seen that card. Oh. That card's pretty cool. It's a five mana. It's just Wooburg. The cost is straight up Wooburg. And it's your first spell. Each turn has Cascade. Mm-hmm. And the other one was, it's called Karthus, Tyrant of Jund.
These are both Shards Block cards. They gave you two Shards Block cards.
Yeah, they came together. Yeah. I mean, I think almost everybody that got previews got two because it was supposed to be Double Masters.
Double.
And Karthus, Tyrant of Jund is pretty cool because it's a 7-mana flying dragon with haste. And when it ETBs, you gain control of all other dragons and untap them. And you don't give them back. You just get to keep them.
Yeah, they're yours.
And that's
they're
it. Yours. And your dragons have haste. Yeah. So you get to immediately steal them and just boom. Jam. So those were my cards, but yeah, I've been following the previews, and there's some bangers in the set.
Really? No, it is a good set. It is a really, really good set. We're talking about draft, and I think this is the case. Drafting this set, you get two first picks, right, for each pack?
That is my understanding. I don't know how that's going to work on Magic Online, or, you know, like, obviously it's easy to do in paper. That's how I understood it. Obviously, I don't want to speak out of line here if that's not the case. But yeah, I think that's one of the cool things about it. It's actually like, the pack one, pick one. That's like the best part. You get to do it twice.
Yeah, you get two pack one, pick one. Pack one, pick two.
Pack one, pick two. Same pack.
Yeah, yeah.
Pack one, pick one. Yeah,
pick ones. There you go. Pack one, pick double. I guess maybe that's how you get it. It's Double Master. You want to stay on flavor there. But yeah, Double Master is available right now on channelfireball.com. Of course, Channel Fireball is a sponsor for this podcast. And if you want to support this podcast, show them that you love it. Use the code Gabby, G-A-B-Y. That supports Gabby. That supports all of Gabby's great content, including her stream, twitch.tv/GabbySparts. So do that. Support our sponsor and support Gabby.
Boom, baby. All right. So we've got some stuff to talk about this week. There's a big Magic event over the weekend. It was the what was it called? It's called PT Finals.
Players Tour Finals. Mm-hmm. The Players Tour Finals, yes.
And it was this was basically like the big event and what's supposed to replace kind of like what Pro Tours out there. Like this is what the big Pro Tour event would have been like. And it was actually really fun to watch. You know, it brought this nostalgia to me of like, I missed going to paper events. It felt like there were people I was rooting for, but you don't get to see them in between the rounds, or you don't go get to bid their matches or anything like that. But it was actually fun to watch and kind of participate, you know, in that sense. They made an interesting decision, and this is the biggest thing we kind of wanted to talk about today, which is they separated the top eight from the actual tournament. And we're not really sure why they did that, but we wanted to talk about the decision based on kind of like the community response we've seen about it.
Yeah. So first of all, it's kind of ironic where the Players Tour Finals doesn't actually have the finals.
Yeah, it was not the finals.
You get the finals later. I don't know, you know, it's always tough to go from idea to execution. You know, sometimes there's great ideas that aren't executed well. Sometimes that they're terrible ideas, but they're executed really, really well and they turn out looking good. I'm not sure what the genesis of this is, but I will say I have forgotten multiple times that this top eight is happening this weekend. And you know, I do the Monday Meta with Martin, and all we do is talk about the prior weekend's tournaments and the next weekend's tournaments. So I spent an hour talking about the PT finals and the upcoming top eight. And I just keep forgetting, like, oh yeah, that's happening this weekend, isn't it? And that is kind of a signal to me that maybe this wasn't either a well-conceived of idea or just executed in the way that it, you know, should have been executed.
Agreed. I think one of the things that maybe Wizards wanted to do was spend the time, you know, when you're doing coverage or when you're like watching at an actual players tour, like in real life, you have like time to kind of do quick hits and like get people in with a person on the street, like somebody who's doing interviews, and ask them questions about their deck, how they felt about their choice, you know, that sort of thing. And you can turn that around really quickly and do highlights and like player profiles for people. But it was more difficult to do that here, given the structure of the tournament. So I think what Wizards wanted to do was put some time between when the top eight was determined to hype up the players. And they've been doing that all week. But it really feels like it's just not really amounting to much. Like they are, they have gotten Riley, who's doing these excellent interviews with players, asking them about, you know, the Players Tour finals, how they feel about the top eight, that sort of thing. But it really also just has made me, like, to me, the tournament already happened in some ways.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Yeah. Right, yeah. And so it's like, wait, what is happening this weekend? That's, wait, what?
And I think you want that. Everything I get what you're saying, and I agree. Where you want to build that story and draw out that tension, and when you're at a live players tour, you're able to do that with different interviews, and you kind of draw it out for that 24 hours, right? You get Saturday the top eight is set, come back on Sunday for the top eight, and I think that's really the perfect amount of time. People get invested in it; they're like, "Oh my gosh, I really want Gabby to win this one. I'm super pulling for Gabby, and I don't care as long as Mashi doesn't win. Whatever it is, whatever drama they want to play into, you kind of let it marinate for 24 hours. I think that's a good time because you kind of like everyone goes to dinner that night. They talk about, "Oh, who's in the top eight? What decks made the top eight? Can't wait for tomorrow. Who do you got, etc." And then the next day, boom, you get it. Drawing it out for a week, I think, especially remotely, the way it is, it's just. It's much more difficult. I don't want to pretend like it's easy at all, but it is orders of magnitude more difficult to do keep that engagement, to keep the audience drawn in and keep building that story and that tension is just, I don't know.
I agree. You know? I do like the player interviews. I think that part is cool. Like getting to see a little bit more about the top eight. For those who maybe weren't following the tournament this weekend, the top eight for this weekend, which is going to be streamed on August 1st, streamed on twitch.tv/magic at 4 p.m. UTC, 9 a.m. PDT. So 9 a.m. Pacific.
9 a.m. Pacific,
Patrick Fernandez, Alan Wu, Michael Jacob, Riku Kumagai, Christoph Prinz, Raf Levy, Ben Weitz, and Christopher Larson. And the actual breakdown of the top eight was Teemerek, Mardu Winota, Mono Black Aggro, Four Color Rec, Azorius Control, Four Color Rec, and Jund Sack.
So four
Teemerek and four other decks.
Like Reclamation put four in the top eight, and then it's four other randos happen to battle their way through.
Yeah, and if you want to go check out the top eight player profiles, I can actually include it in the show notes. You have the interviews that, you know, Riley's doing with the players. Like, it's very similar to what you would see the morning of the top eight or that night when they're wrapping up coverage, and you have just the host just asking them questions with very quick questions about how they feel about their choices and stuff, which is kind of the closest we get to an actual Pro Tour right now. But it was rough, Mashi. So BK, host of Constructed Resources, he was playing in this event and he was crushing it. And it was cool because we have this like little Discord chat where he would come in when he was done with this match and tell us how he was doing. And so he was like winning and winning and winning and winning. And eventually got to a point where he was like live for the top eight. And he gets paired up against Ben Weitz, his teammate, for his like match. And he was in a spot where if he won, it wasn't guaranteed that he top eight, but the chance was good enough that he should definitely play it out. And if he lost, it was almost guaranteed that he'd still stay in the top 16 based on what people thought other people might do in terms of like drawing and playing. And they ended up playing it out. BK lost. And the decisions that the other people in the top eight made it so that BK actually ended up 17th. So he didn't just miss top eight. He also missed top 16 by doing this.
That's so brutal.
It was
so brutal.
It was really sad.
What was he running? Do you know?
I think he was on, you know what? Now that you say that, I'm not actually sure. It might've been Four Color Rec.
Yeah.
Okay, which is not, not surprising.
Do you know if he had to, because he and Ben are teammates, were they on the same deck, same 75?
Yes, I actually think they might have been on the same. And Ben was on Four Color Rec too, so it might have been the 75 card mirror.
Oh my god!
Brutal stuff. Yeah.
Just brutal.
I will say that even though I wasn't there, it did give me the feeling like, and I'm sure a bunch of people here listening to the podcast know this feeling, when your friend is playing for the top eight or is playing for a match win that's really important because it'll either give them status or give them buys or qualify them for another event, that sort of thing. And you're just like watching the game and you're just waiting, waiting for the result. It's like one of the most anxiety, not even anxiety, yeah. not in a bad way, but it's just like I was a nervous wreck waiting for BK. And because this wasn't at an actual PT, I couldn't go see his match because he wasn't even featured. They featured him eventually, but I couldn't go see it. So I was just like sitting around like, oh my God, I just want to know. I just want to know if he's going to win or not. I was so nervous.
I know exactly what that feels like. It's called PT Kyoto 2009 finals, watching Luis play Gabriel Nassif.
Oh my
gosh. He's
got
it locked down. He needs to trigger Wimbrisk Heights. I think he had mind games under head games or whatever under it. I remember watching that match and I was so, you know, spoilers, Luis doesn't win. And it was one of the best. I think you should watch it.
I've seen this match.
Yeah, it is one of the best.
Match, yeah.
It's two of, in my opinion, and I'm biased. I actually have a lot of affection for Nassif too. So I'm biased towards both these players. It's two of players who I think are the top five all time playing a tremendous match for all the marbles in a pro tour. And it is worth watching. It's a great match, but yes, the tension on that, watching it live, you're like, oh my gosh, he's going to do it. He's going to win back-to-back pro tours. Cause he just won Berlin, right? He won with Elves. And so, yeah, no, I know the feeling.
100%. So it was cool to actually get some of that from this, even though I know it's very different than a normal players tour, but I am looking forward to seeing the finals and see how that ends up going. Once again, I think it would have been better if maybe they just like consolidated into the same weekend. Yeah. I don't really see the reason to split it up, but that said, I think it has been a cool experience to still be able mm-hmm. to participate in a pro tour, not participate. By participate, I mean, watch on Twitch, but yeah, still be
the voyeurism aspect is great. I think that's unbelievable. And that's one of the best level ups we've gotten from this horrible situation we're in right now.
Yeah.
But I will say, I really hope either Mardu Knights, MJ's Mardu Knights, or Kumagai's Mono Black Aggro takes it down. I would feel so Mardu Winota winning out of nowhere, like this kind of rogue, completely rogue deck that MJ put together. Nothing would make me happier.
It'd be so sweet. Yeah. I really like MJ too. He was like one of the first streamers I started watching. So.
Oh, he's great. Yeah. He's great. Do you know what his stream is? We should shout out his
Darkest
stream.
Like, Mage.
Darkest Mage.
I can link it in the show notes. Let me make sure to note myself.
He could be a bit quiet in person, in my experience, but he's always been a super nice guy.
He's super nice. Guy. No, he is kind of, class. I don't know if shy. He's a little more reserved, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly what I'd say. He's reserved. Mm-hmm. But he's always been a super nice guy. And he's one of those players that everybody on the Pro Tour knows. He's just a classy player.
Yeah. I mean, part of the boomer streamers. Like, he was one of the OG streamers. And he used to be a full-time streamer. He's not anymore. But he still streams. Like, he's been streaming for... Mm-hmm. over six years, I think.
Is MJ a boomer or a zoomer?
He's a boomer.
Okay. Now, there's this weird line about boomer magic players. I'm not talking about streaming, but MJ's playing for a while. So how about this? Is Kenji, is he a boomer or a zoomer?
I think he's a boomer.
Is he?
Yeah.
Because he's been playing online magic, digital magic. I think he's played a lot more digital magic than he has played physical magic. But not if that's the determinant.
I don't think the difference between... I mean, not. I don't even know what the definition is of magic boomer, magic zoomer. But in my professional boomer zoomer opinion, I don't think whether you've played online or not online matters as much as like when you started playing. I think that.
Really?
That,
okay.
I think so, because someone like me, for example, I at this point I think I am much more of a magic boomer. Or
yes, are you really?
I think so. I've been playing since 20. Basically like 2011. I've been playing for like 9 years or something. And
what's set? What's set? Because like to me, years have no meaning. It's all about what set you started.
Sure. Avacyn Restored.
Avacyn Restored. Okay. I don't know, man. Isn't that a modern border set?
I mean, I don't know when you would make the distinction of like when you become a real boomer or a zoomer, but I feel like there's a new breed of Magic player who only has played online and only knows Arena, and they look at Magic online and they're like, what is this thing? That to me is a Magic zoomer. Like, they don't know what Modo is. They don't know formats outside of Standard. They only play Booster Draft and Standard, and that's it.
So am I a boomer or a zoomer? Could you just describe? Will not download.
You're a boomer. Magic you're just online. More of a boomer than I am.
But my point is, like, I won't download Magic online because at this point I have tons of stuff on there. And I'm like, oh my God, the UI's changed so much. I'm scared. I'm just sticking with Arena. And I do play more than standard. I have one historic deck. So I play standard, historic, and tons of limited at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I don't know. I don't really know where you split it up,
but it is funny. It is kind of funny to think about.
Yeah.
So then we also had an announcement that Wizards did earlier this week for this thing called set boosters. So let me pull them up.
So this is a long thing. Mero went through, this is not an exaggeration for those of you who haven't read the article. The pack itself is split into zones. And if I recall correctly, there's like an art zone. There's what's after the art? There's the art zone. And then I don't know if the land zone is next. Yeah, I think it was art.
Yeah, land. It's I can tell like you. It's
the commons and the uncommons are next.
So let me explain what this booster is for somebody who has no idea what we're talking about.
Yeah. Okay. Break it down for us, Gabby.
The basic premise of this is that Wizards was taking kind of a look at who's opening packs and what do packs get opened for. And the way packs are made for every pack in Magic really is so that you can draft them. Mm-hmm. And so that means that there's like a certain amount of commons, uncommons, and a rare and a promo card or like sometimes like a special land. And that's what you get in your booster pack. And then that's what you get to draft with at the store if you go to your local shop. But then when they were looking at the stats of it, they realized that the majority or like almost half of all booster packs that were being opened weren't being opened for sealed or draft. They were just being opened because people wanted to open the packs. Simple as that. And so using that information, Wizards thought, I wonder if there's space here to create a booster pack that is a specific like to open booster packs. Kind of how in Arena, when you get a booster pack, you can't use it for draft. You can't use it for anything. All you can do in Arena when you have a booster is open it. There's almost like no reason not to open it because it's the only thing you can do.
That's great. Yeah, I had not made that comparison, but that you're right. This is like almost like a Zoomer product, right? They're so used to these booster packs that you can only open. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. Sorry, continue.
Totally. And so the goal is Wizards determined that this is a thing, right? They want to cater to, you know, instead of making everybody fit in the scheme of booster packs always look like this, they're like, hey, what if we make booster packs that are different, that cater to different people? So they've tried and experimented things like this in the past. One of the things is called the collector's boosters. And collector's boosters are these packs that come with every new set. So like Throne of Eldraine had Throne of Eldraine collector's boosters. Mm-hmm. And they cost a lot more than the booster pack, like usually like 2x, 3x. And the shtick is that you always get a foil and you can get some cards that only show up in those packs, whether they be full art, full extent, or like border extended, alternate art, foil, mm-hmm. like all the like cool, super cool premium cards show up there. And they're obviously very fun to open because, you know, like opening a booster is fun. Opening a booster where everything is super cool, like that's even more fun. Big downside, super expensive, right?
Yeah.
So I think what they were trying to do with this booster pack, which are called the set boosters, is create a pack that wasn't that much more expensive than a normal booster pack that was mm-hmm. specifically made to be open. So like you can't draft with these because some of the stuff you get from these boosters are not even like real Magic cards. Some mm-hmm. of them are just art or like special things. So that's the general idea.
The other thing is like they say something like the commons, the uncommons, the cards in the pack are actually related in some fashion. So like you could, I have no idea, but you could theoretically open one up and it's like there's six burn spells in here. They're all red burn spells, right? Like that's none of the color balancing that you'd need for a good draft is there.
Yeah. You could not use them for draft if you wanted. And so if, you know, I'll make sure that this is linked in the show notes as always, but you can... They did a write-up for like the phases of what it's like to open mm-hmm. a booster like this. Mm-hmm. So you start out with the art card slot, which is basically the art of a Magic card in the size of a Magic card, but there's nothing else. It's just the art.
Just an art, yeah.
It looks really pretty, actually. I didn't know that these existed. They're super cool. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Then there's like a section with land slots, and this article explains kind of like the percentage chance of certain things happening. So like they increase the percentage chance that you see a mythic in one of these. They're generally changing it for everything, because it used to be like 1 in 7 and now it's like 1 in 6.5 or something, was a mythic, and now it's going to be more likely to be mythics. And then there's a section called connected commons and uncommons. That's the thing you mentioned.
Yep.
Then you go through the next section, which is called fireworks, which has this one thing that I cannot believe they use this in like their marketing materials. It has this slot called the head turner slot.
Head turning slot.
It's the head turning slot. Yes, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't believe, I cannot believe that this is marketing materials, but yeah, I did.
That what? What's in this pack? That's what it is, right?
That's supposed to be what it is, but it just, I mean, whatever. It doesn't matter. I just couldn't believe that that's what they called it. But that is supposed to be something that's like a firework, like something really cool. Like it's splashy, you know what that makes, exciting. You don't know what to expect in that spot because it's supposed to turn your head.
It's like, you know what that reminds me of? You know that meme where like the guy's walking with the girl, but he's looking at the other
girl?
And it'll be like if it was you're the guy, it'd be Gabby. And she's walking and next to her is M21 draft, but walking behind her is Vintage Cube draft. Slot? And he's like turned and looking at Vintage Cube. So that's what this reminds me of. That meme is like, oh, the head turning slot.
Yeah. I totally agree. Then right after in the fireworks section, there's still a wild card rarity slot, which basically says like you might get a common half the time, but it might be an uncommon 3.1% of the time, or it might be a rare and that's only 1.6% of the time. So it changes. And then at the very end of the boosters, the big finish, it comes with a rare mythic slot, which is essentially the same thing you would expect in the booster pack. That's like, that's the best part of the pack. But then there's also a foil slot, which guarantees that you'll always get a foil with these set boosters. And the foil can be any rarity. So it could be a common all the way to mythic rare. And then lastly, there's like a foil slot, and this is called the epilogue. And it is basically a section where you might see a token, or it might be an ad or something else. You might also get 25% of the time, instead of an ad or a token card, you get this thing called a card from, quote, the list, unquote. Yes, the list. So the list is, what is the list? The list is supposed to be the coolest cards from Magic history. They're supposed to highlight something cool, whether it be like fun mechanics or different artwork or who knows what. Like, it's supposed to have something special.
Or hopefully it's cards that they want to reprint to invigorate like eternal formats or something like that, to the degree they can. I hope they do use that.
Yeah, I mean, we don't really know what they're going to put in there. The three examples they had for the quote list unquote were Muscle Sliver, which is kind of random, Cloud Goat Ranger, which is a cool card, and then
Bomb Unlimited.
Yeah. And Pact of Negation, which is, you know, I mean, the packs are cool. Like, they cause zero mana. Like, the first time you see them, you're like, oh, you lose the game on the spot. Wow. So yeah, that's the new set boosters. Mashi, how do you feel about the set boosters?
So one, again, I'm a boomer. I come from an era when that was just a booster, right? Because boosters weren't made for drafting until Mirage Block. So if you were buying Legend, or if you were buying, you know, Unlimited or Revised or Ice Age or Alliances, Homelands, those packs weren't made for draft. They were, the draft wasn't a whole thing yet. So, but the kind of the larger, more abstract question that I have seen this product, Gabby, which I do like, and so there's different hats I have on here as a player, as a consumer. I think it's really cool. I like the idea that Wizards is specifically making packs that aren't one size fits all. Right there, why force everyone to buy the same pack when people want different things out of their packs? So I think that's really, really cool. As a retailer, I hate it, right? Because like, wait a minute, I have to stock this whole other product, right? Because I got to pay for those cases of the set boosters,
right?
And put them on my shelf. And then if everyone comes in and goes, no, I don't want that, that's a dollar more.
You're I have all these set boosters. Stuff. What do I do?
Right. Whenever they create new SKUs like this, you're like, how much do I have to sink in here to keep my customers happy? But that's, you know, by the by. But in general, what do you think? What do you think of the idea that, because you talked about collector's edition boosters, and then there's this whole other thing which we just talked about before we went live, which are the VIP boosters from Double Masters, $100 a booster. Now they're like double booster size, like 33 or 34 cards. I can't recall, but it's $100 booster. So they're really leaning into this. It's not one size fits all. What do you want? Do you want the uber lux version or the regular version or the drafting version? Like, what do you want? How do you like that in general as a theory?
So as a concept, I love it. I think it's a really good concept because there is no reason to try to pigeonhole everyone into, hey, buy the regular booster as it's always been, when clearly there's appetite and market for people who want something a little bit different. For example, you know, I love opening booster packs. It's one of the things I've loved doing the most in Magic always. And at this point, I've played enough that I'm kind of jaded in the sense that, like, I really need to open something real good in a pack before I get excited. Like, and I'll thumb through all the commons. But there was a time where, like, do you remember when you used to go through it and look at every common and read it? And, like, that was fun, right? So I love that this, like, I think I would find opening a said booster pretty exciting. Because it just has different and cool stuff. And I think that's the whole idea, right? It's that you have this experience where you go from, welcome to fireworks, to big finish, to epilogue. Like, it's supposed to be kind of like an adventure you go on. And I love that concept. The set, the collector's boosters and or like the VIP boosters, like the one for Double Masters, I have a really hard time wrapping my head around that product existing, because $100 a booster pack is me as one of, like, as entrenched as you get, I cannot fathom buying something like that. And it's just like, who out there is buying these collector, like,
I don't know.
Surely people are, but I just have a hard time putting myself in that spot.
Well, so collector's edition boosters, I'll say, just because, you know, through Channel Fireball, some of them are hits, some of them are great, some of them sell like hotcakes, like, oh my gosh, we can't get enough of these. Some of them kind of start, the pricing starts to, like, filter down until it hits parity, and then it sells. So they're not huge hits, but you're not stuck with them. I don't think, you know, by and large, you're stuck with them. This VIP thing is insane. $100 a pack is crazy.
So much.
I think a lot of there's been a lot of blowback against it being predatory. And it's really tough for me. It's always hard for me to adjust to asking, okay, is this a predatory product? Should this product be being sold? Are we taking advantage of players? You know, is Wizards taking advantage of players by doing this? I tend to think, like, if you don't want it, don't buy it. If you can't afford it, you shouldn't. And I know that, you know, hey, I've been guilty of it. I've purchased things that, given the time and my financial situation, I really couldn't afford. So I'm sympathetic to that. That's not a hard and fast line. A lot of people cross it all the time, and yours truly has done it. But it's hard for me to say that they shouldn't do it because it's predatory. I guess I tend to think if there's some kind of appetite for different products, be they set boosters or draft boosters, there's certainly an appetite for, or collectors or VIP boosters, I think it's okay to offer it. I don't know. What's your take on it?
I understand what you're saying, and I'm sympathetic to that too. I think there is some amount of signaling that comes from Wizard's end by creating products like that can be alienating to the people who that doesn't market to. Because there's a difference between a Commander product existing, and I'm like, oh, cool, maybe I don't want to participate in the Commander product, but I'm happy that the people who like Commander are playing with it. That's great. I'm happy this product exists. Whereas the $100 Double Masters Super VIP Special Edition thing, when I see that, I'm like, it leaves me feeling very misplaced. Like, are people buying that? And if so, like, why is this product being made? I just have a really hard time understanding. You know what I mean? It's like very jarring. Jarring experience.
I will say that I think the blowback's died down a little bit, in the sense that people thought that was insane. Like, ridiculous to make that product. Are you kidding me? And Double Masters itself is just kind of like, you guys just whatever doing with it. It's another master set. Double Masters, as we mentioned earlier, has ended up being such a good set from what we've seen, that people, I think, are very, very excited about Double Masters as a set, not the VIP with the regular. And they understand, like, actually, the Double Master set's really, really good, which means the value for these $100 packs is actually going to be okay. I don't think it's considered a good thing, but I think things have gone from, like, very, very hot under that VIP pack to kind of like a bit more tepid.
Yeah.
Not cold, not room temperature, but still warm, to be sure. But it's just an interesting idea. I guess I toy with the notion of drawing that line if I'm Wizards of the Coast, saying, well, we want to make products for all different segments of the magic market, which I do think, I think that is great.
That's really smart. You should lean into that. Yeah.
Yeah. The retailer in me hates that, but every other hat I wear loves that idea. Right. But then we say, well, we limit it though, because there are limits to that, where we say, well, maybe not the $100 pack. Maybe that we don't want to make anything for that audience. I don't know. It's tough because it's a product I would never buy. And I don't think I would ever have any desire to buy. There's no inclination to buy that product. But I'm also someone, like, I don't like foils. So I don't buy foil products. I don't like foil. I would never foil out my deck, for instance. It's just not something I would ever do. So maybe I'm just the wrong audience for that. But there was a lot of brouhaha over it. This is about the set packs, obviously, but it just calls to mind the overall philosophy right now.
Right.
Of trying to make it.
I do think that the set boosters hit in a better note because they definitely, even though they come with more quote value unquote than a normal booster, they're only really on average like $1 more expensive than a normal booster pack. So it is the sort of thing where you actually get to feel like you're making a choice. Like, do I want a regular booster that I can draft with, or do I want the exciting pack opening experience that's a little more expensive, but I can justify it easily because it's a fun, like it'll be more fun for me to open and I might get more value out of it.
And I think there's a sense that there isn't that audience overlap, whereas it's very clearly the quote unquote draft boosters. That's for people to open and draft with. That's your audience. The set boosters are people who maybe want packs, but don't really want to draft. And that's your audience. Whereas collector's editions and VIP boosters, there's so much overlap between the people who want those boosters and maybe both other audiences that there's no clear demarcation where you go, okay, this is what this product is for. So maybe that's what's missing.
Yeah. I you know what I do like about it? I think about it from like the Grand Prix perspective. And I know that sometimes I go to a Grand Prix and I play inside events, I end up with some prize tickets, and then I go to the prize wall. And sometimes I'll get some art and that's cool. Or sometimes I'll get, I don't know, maybe there's like a playmat I want and that's cool. But a lot of times I just end up getting packs from the latest set. And I know, like, you know, and I take those packs home and then I just put them in there and I never open them again. And like, in fact, if you're watching the video version of it, they're like just all back there.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if that was an option, if these like set boosters were an option, I would open all of them at the Grand Prix and it would be fun to get my friends around and be like, hey, let's open these 10 boosters that I got and just go through all of them. Like, I could see that being very fun. Whereas I don't really look to do that with normal boosters.
Regular boosters. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I also think something like that is pretty cool because, you know, if GPs ever come back, fingers crossed, something like that will be very fun.
There'll be some event. We'll all get together and play live Magic.
I know. We were joking about this with BDM and we were like, are you coming to non-con, the one where we just go into a hotel for the entire weekend and hang out in the lobby all weekend? Because
there'd be a market for that.
It's non-con.
It's just hangouts and good food, right?
Yes. You just figure out where to eat and you hang out in the lobby the entire time and you get drinks from the bar and it's non-con.
That would be, sign me up.
I was totally in for that. We were joking that the only thing you needed to register for non-con is just a certificate of a vaccine after COVID is done.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. There's your ticket.
Yeah, we're like, and that's it. All righty. Well, so coming home. Yeah.
Speaking of cons, there was supposed to be a convention coming up this weekend, Gabby, that I know you were looking forward to going to. I was there when you were booking your rooms. Again, we're talking all about Phoenix, but I was there when you were booking rooms for it. This weekend, of course, was supposed to be Gen Con.
Single tear rolls down my face. Ba, ba, ba. Ba, ba, ba. So this is actually really, really sad. I mean, I kid, but Gen Con is one of the most fun events that I go to every year. It's one of the things I most look forward to. As Masha can attest, I was there trying to book my hotel room when we were at Phoenix. And along with a lot of other cons that people love, Gen Con was one of the cons that just had to suspend its plan because of COVID-19. Undeniably the correct decision. But you know, they were dealt a pretty bad hand this year, and they've been trying to rally from that. And one of the things that they've been doing, and I really have to, this part of the reason we wanted to do like a really big shout out for this, is they put together a thing called Gen Con Online. And I don't know if people are aware that this is happening, but there's a lot of really cool stuff going on for Gen Con Online. And the fact that they've managed to put this together from the ashes of a convention that they were working on already that didn't pan out, I find both very impressive and wish to bring more attention to.
Right. And I mean, hopefully, I mean, it's inspiring. And yes, if this really is the world we're going to live in for a while, let's see more of this. Let's get more. Let's try to find ways to engage in these conventions that we're not able to physically attend. They're not able to be physically held. So let's find a way to interact and enjoy it online. And that's what I love about this Gen Con online thing.
I think it's amazing. So yeah, we wanted to tell you guys about some of the events that are going on Gen Con Online and kind of what you can expect. So there is, and I'm going to link to the show notes for this episode are going to be super long because I have a million
links. There's tons of links.
There's tons of links. So one of the things they're doing is they're having an exhibit hall. So if you've never been to a Gen Con, one of the coolest parts is when you get to the main hall, you can see all these retailers that are doing sales for their games and plushies and grab bags and all this cool stuff. And people are like loving just all this awesome like gamer energy, right? So there is a virtual one this time around. Obviously, it's not going to have the exact same feel, but you can see all the people who were going to be exhibitors plus new people at Gen Con, and you can check out their stores. Everyone is running special discounts for Gen Con, so even though we're not there, you can still get some of those at the con specials and discounts and package deals that they sell. And just kind of take a look at some, you know, you'll see some of the indie developers, because that's one of the cool things at Gen Con is you get to go around and take a look at the new games that are upcoming, new publishers, that sort of thing. So you'll still be able to do some of that. There are a bunch of streaming events. So there's like three different channels that are going to be running the entire weekend with play tests, people playing D&D, all sorts of stuff. That's on GenCon.com/streaming, I believe. So I will link to that there if you want to go take a look. There's going to be entertainment and stuff going the entire weekend. And then there's also a really big Magic section. So
it's tremendous. There's so much stuff going on. And we should totally shout out Pastime Games, Alan Hockman. Alan, if you've gone to GPs, you know who Alan is. And I've always loved Alan. I know that some people have different experiences with Pastimes. Even when I was a player or as a vendor, and then later as a TO, working with Alan's always been a joy. So I'm just happy to see that he's able to do something with this event, and always happy to support Alan. So great job, Pastimes. Great job, Alan. Go check this out. These events are awesome.
Yeah, so I have to, full disclosure, say that Alan reached out to me asking if I wanted to play in any of the events for Gen Con Online this weekend, if I would promote it. So I said, yeah, because I saw some of the events and they looked super fun. So full disclosure, Pastimes did count my entry into these events, but I did want to do a shout out because some of these events are super cool. So
Wait a minute. He's offering you free events to shout him out. You know what? I take back everything I said. I'm not getting any free events out of this. Forget it, Alan. I take it all back.
I take it all back. Yeah, so hashtag Spawn from Gen Con, I guess, or from Pastimes for these events specifically. But
not this guy.
Mush is like, I want to play in the Gen Con Online too.
Yeah.
So one of the cool things that's going on is they have a Gen Con Online Cube. And those are going to be the events that I'm playing in. So those are happening at like 12 p.m. EST every day. And there's one every single day. And the events are actually run online. So like the event just goes through Magic Online. And they give you a code and you just put it in the store and it gives you a ticket to run the event. It's super easy.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
So here are some of the cool events that are going on this weekend. There's the Gen Con Cube, which is happening every single day up until the 2nd of August.
Is there a cube list for that? Or is it like, do we know which cube it is? Okay. Mm-hmm.
It is. I mean, there's a Cube Cobra list to it, and it's a vintage cube. It's a powered cube.
Nice. Mm-hmm. It's powered. Mm-hmm. It's powered.
It's all powered.
Right. Nice.
There's these events called the Online Arena Champs, which basically they're like little events that you can compete in until you play in this bigger event on Sunday, which they always have at the real Gen Con. And if you've been following me for a long time, you've probably heard me talk about previous Gen Cons when I went with Louise. And Louise was playing in the little queues, totally sharked them to play in the final event. And he did great. He got to do he got to do a beta Rochester draft from it.
Oh, I remember. Yeah,
that
this.
Was it.
Oh
my God.
All the poor 5-year-old.
I know.
He
was just like doing IPA drafts or something, some format he was so good at because he really wanted to play the beta Rochester draft.
Oh my God. Just dream crushing left and right, Luis. How dare you? How dare
it's
you?
So funny. They're doing things like Vintage Champs prelim and then the Vintage Champs. And this one's actually cool. They actually provide all the cards for you. So if you've.
That's
if
unbelievable.
You, so cool. I know.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
And so just so everyone really catches that, I think for the Legacy and the Marquee Legacy and Vintage events, you can get basically a fully loaded Magic Online account to play those decks. So guess what? If you've always wanted to play Legacy and Vintage and you don't have the cards, you just haven't had the opportunity because those cards are expensive, this is your chance. Go play it online. Go play with those cards. Those decks that you have scribbled in your notepad that you don't have enough money to build in real life, you can actually play it at these events and they'll give you the cards to play with it. I think that's just awesome.
It's so cool. No, I was so impressed because I knew that Gen Con was doing stuff online, but I just had no idea what because, you know, I've been following Gen Con for forever. I was in their listserv when they announced that they were canceling it. And when I actually came on to see all the events that were happening this weekend, I was like, wow, this is people. I don't think people realize that this is a huge thing that's
definitely
going
not.
On this weekend. It's awesome. Yeah. So some other stuff that is happening on various days, but you can keep a lookout on them. They're doing stuff like Jumpstart Sealed, Historic Prelims, Mystery Booster Sealed, Two-Headed Ooh. Giant Sealed, the Arena Champs, Event Commander Pods. The actual events that the like little qualifiers qualify you into. And tomorrow actually on stream, I am streaming the Double Masters pre-release event.
So what time is that at?
I think it's at noon my time.
Noon your time? So twitch.tv/GabbySparts
So earlier than my normal stream time, but it's I was just like, oh, they're doing Double Masters pre-release, awesome, sign me up. So
heck yeah.
Yeah, so there's a lot of really cool stuff going on there, and also there's a bunch of stuff going on for other games if you like more games than just Magic. If you're sad that Gen Con's not here, there's a whole list of games that you can sign up to. There's D&D, there's lots of tabletop demos, a lot of things are happening like virtually, but it's very well organized, and the badge to actually sign up to any of these events is free. So some of the events
awesome.
Might cost money, but the badge you get for signing up to any of these things, totally free.
Yeah. So, and I think that's important because Gen Con is not a free event normally, but this online Gen Con, you have no excuse. Take some time during your weekend, check it out. Because look, I just think this is something we've got to crack the code on how to do this really successfully, all of us as a community, so we can have more of these. So check it out, give feedback. And you know, the only way these things really come off and continue and improve is if we kind of engage with it and then come away and say, hey, here's what was great about it. Here's what maybe we need to focus on in the future. I had no plans to do anything like that. Then once you told me it's free, I'm like, well, we got to check this out. You know, we got to know how this
works. It's super cool. I was just so impressed because given the bad hand that was dealt to them this year, rallying and creating this whole version of Gen Con online that has a lot of aspects and like really cool digital aspects that they were able to leverage the digital aspects that you can't at an actual con. You know what I mean? So, oh my God, Tommy's being so cute.
Yeah, he wants to sit in my lap. I'm like,
I know,
Tommy,
I see he's like pawing at you. He's like, give me some attention. Yeah, so to close out the podcast, I thought since we were talking about Gen Con and tabletop gaming and all that, I came up with my top 8 games, tabletop games that I've been enjoying.
Are these in order?
I didn't top 8 them actually. So it kind of ebbs and flows because some of these games I've liked so much and then I played them so much that I don't play them that much anymore. So I think it would be unfair to like, certainly I could make a top 8. I just decided to make like, these are the 8 best games that I've enjoyed in the last couple years that if you like tabletop games, if you maybe have a couple people that you live with, or if you have a small group of friends that you're actually seeing during quarantine, like we have been seeing the folks at Casa Nasty, like the people at Matt Nass's house, and they're like the only people we see. So if you have anything like that, or if you want to play with your friends over that maybe live in a different state over something like Tabletop Simulator, which we've been doing also.
That's awesome.
Raptero, myself, and Luis have been playing Tabletop Simulator with Pat Cox and Tara. Yeah. Yes.
Pat and Tara Cox, yes.
Mm-hmm. We've been playing with them, and it actually works really well. Like, I actually thought it would be tedious and cumbersome, and it works awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So here are my recommendations, Mashi. You'll tell me if you've played any of these or anything. You're like,
I don't think I've played any. I'm looking at the list. I'm pretty sure I haven't played any of them.
All right. So one of them is called Parks, and it is a game about going to national parks, which sounds kind of like, what are you doing? But it's really cute. It's a worker placement game where you go visit different parks, you buy the parks, and you can do different things that are very thematic. Like, you can go camping, you can take pictures, you can do that sort of thing. And it's just a resource management worker placement game. But it's got beautiful artwork, and it's actually sweet when you like pull out parks that you've been to, and you're like, oh, I've been there. That one's really cool. It makes me want to get outdoors.
I was going to say, that might be a double-edged sword being locked in right now, but I like the idea, yeah.
It's a good one. Next up is Quacks of Quedlinburg. It is a kind of like push your luck sort of game. Like, you have to risk it for the biscuit. What you do is the theme is you're building these potions, and you buy elements to different potions, and this is a really good multiplayer game. Like, if you're looking for a game for like 4 to 5 people that plays really well with multiple people, this is definitely the game. Mm-hmm. And you're pulling out chips from a bag blindly, hoping that your bomb doesn't explode because it's an unstable bomb.
Oh my God.
It's really fun. And like, I'm sure it comes to no surprise, this Luis is always exploding in this game, and then always claiming he's very unlucky because he's always just pushing it to the limit as far as he can.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome game. Next up is Clank, which is a game made by Direwolf Digital. And a bunch of our folks, our friends here, actually like have worked for the game. And I'm not putting it here because they're my friends, because they're not even listening to the podcast, but it's actually a really fantastic game. It is a deck builder, but it has this kind of element of you move your pieces around a board to try to come in and steal this treasure and leave before a dragon kills everybody in the party. So you're both trying to like build a really good deck and also escape with the most points and the most treasure. And the further you go into the underground, into where the dungeon would be, the angrier the dragon gets. So the higher likelihood chance you have of the dragon actually killing you while you're there.
Is this digital then? You said it's made
by Dowell. These are all tabletop games. Tabletop. But you can play them on Tabletop Simulator, which just simulates a tabletop game.
Okay. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Next up is a game called Everdell, and it's did you ever watch The Secret of NIMH when you were a kid?
Yes.
Yeah.
So it actually kind of scared me.
It's supposed to be kind of a scary movie, but it has a lot of the same vibe. Like, it's supposed to be about a city and all these animals that live in the society. And it's another worker placement game where your goal is to get the most points, but you're doing things like buying parts of a city and you're developing out. You buy farmers, the farmers have wives, you can build a school, you can get the lawyers, like, you get all these like little pieces. Beautiful artwork for the game. Just really, really good. It plays really well for 4 players.
That sounds cool. Okay.
Next up is a game called Splendor. This is definitely the least flavorful of all the games. The premise is you're jewelry makers and you're making jewelry. That's like the... not super exciting. This is just a classic resource management game where you're just like buying more resources to get more resources. But the mechanics are very clean, plays super well. Really, really recommend it if you like that sort of game. Okay. It's super fun. Have you ever played Codenames? This one you might have played.
I have not. I've heard of it, and we might even own it, but I don't think we've played it.
Yeah, Codenames is really good. So Codenames is more of a party game. You definitely want to play it with like minimum 4 people, but it scales up to more. And it's actually a very good game if you want to play it online with your friends. Like, I've seen a lot of people play with Skype, and you can still figure out like there's ways that you can play it online. But you get 2 teams, and each team has a clue master. And the clue master gives hints about what the thing might be. Like, your hint might be glasses, and you have to give hints at that, but don't make it super obvious for the other team what your thing is. So you're speaking in codes. That's where the name comes from. You also have to make sure that the hints that you give don't accidentally explode a bomb that is in the board. Because your opponents, neither you nor your teammates nor your opponents know where that bomb is. So you have to be very careful with the hints you give.
Okay. Okay, I'm into it.
Have you ever played King of Tokyo?
Nope.
King of Tokyo is another game designed by Richard Garfield. And it's very Yahtzee-like. The premise is that you're one of these monsters that's trying to take over Tokyo City. And you're battling against the other monsters who are also trying to take over Tokyo City. So it's this like giant battle of monsters. And you're essentially trying to roll Yahtzee and get the most victory points. You can win by either killing everybody else. So you attack, like when you're in Tokyo City, you can attack everybody outside of it. Or if you get to 20 victory points is the other way you win the game. But it has really exciting turns because you're rolling dice and then re-rolling. And it's just fun, lighthearted, very, very good family game too.
Okay. And
last but not least, a game called Biblios.
This one I'm really interested in because like it's two player.
It's 2 to 4 players. But it actually ends up being there's a lot of games that are 2 to 4 players that don't scale well to be a 2-player game. This one really does. Yeah. It plays really well heads up. Luis and I have played so much Biblios, I cannot even tell you. You are these like priests/monks who are investigating books. That's basically like the flavor of the game. But it has 2 sides to it, where the first side is a side where you're like a buying phase. And then there's another side where you're like auctioning stuff off. And a lot of what you do in the one phase of the game really directly affects what happens in the other phase. So it's one of these games where you like have to keep track of what they are taking. You're trying to accumulate the most resources in the shape of books, essentially, which are the cards. And you get into these, it's just so ridiculous, almost like counterspell wars against other people because you're trying to dominate certain colors. And what they are doing is like when you're like, you know, hoarding resources to get into a counter war with someone, Biblios plays exactly like that. It's really weird that's how it is, but it's really fun. So I think Magic players would love it.
This sounds like the perfect game for you and Luis too.
Oh my God.
It's like,
yes.
Oh, you get into these counter wars.
You literally get in counter wars in this game. It's very strange, but super duper fun. It plays great with 4 players. And even if you just have only 2 people to play with, also plays out great.
All right, so there we go. That's Gabby's recipe for games. In the spirit of Gen Con, the top 8 games to play when we're all locked in, tabletop games, Parks, Everdale, Quacks of Quedinburg, Clank, Splendor, Biblios, King of Tokyo, and Codenames. Well, there we go, Gabby. That does it for this week's Magic FM. Everyone, check out Gen Con, seriously. You know, if for no other reason to support initiatives like this for our community, for this gaming community, and shout out to Alan Hockman. I really love Alan. He's always been a real classy guy. So I hope everyone does take time to check out Gen Con online. And, you know, let us know that you're doing it. Let us know how it went because we can always pass feedback on. And I hope it's a great event. Good luck tomorrow, Gabby. Double Masters. I'm jealous.
I'm excited.
Yeah. Not all of us got comped into that event, Alan.
Thank you very much.
So good luck in the event. That does it for this week. Thank you so much for hanging out with us for this hour. You can find us on Twitter at Magic FM Podcast. You can find us, of course, on Channel Fireball. If you're listening to us as a podcast, hit subscribe, but we also have a video. You can see the video on Channel Fireball. You can see us live, our beautiful faces as we act out everything on Channel Fireball and at youtube.com/Channel Fireball. Check out Gabby Spartz on social media at Gabby Spartz. She's at twitch.tv/Gabby Spartz. Tomorrow, this may not go up in time, but tomorrow starting around 11 Pacific, but normally from 2 to 6 Pacific, Monday through Friday. Of course, I am Moshi Scanlon, the guy on the left at Moshi Scanlon. That does it for this week's Magic FM. Thank you so much. We'll be back next week. Until then, be wonderful to yourselves. Be wonderful to each other.
Bye-bye.